Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's first discussion on the Greek economic prospects and outlook. Greece's return to investment grade is not just a financial milestone. It is a testament to years of hard-fought reforms, resilience, and determination. It signifies a new chapter for our economy, opening the doors to a wider pool of global investors, reducing borrowing costs, and strengthening confidence in Greece's long-term potential. This achievement positioned Greece as a credible and attractive player in the European and global economic landscape. It creates opportunities to channel investments into key sectors like renewable energy, tourism, technology, and infrastructure. But with these opportunities come challenges and responsibilities. To sustain this momentum, Greece must navigate a complex global environment marked by geopolitical tension and wars. We have recently seen what happened in Syria a couple of days now, shifting U.S.-European relations and economic uncertainties. Continued structured reforms, strategic use of EU funds, and collaboration between the government, the private sector, and the financial institution will be essential to ensure Greece's sustainable and inclusive growth. Our distinguished panel today will explore these dynamics, providing valuable insights and perspectives into what lies ahead for Greece. So now please allow me to present you our esteemed speakers. From Barclays, Mr. Lefteris Pharmakis, Senior FX Strategist. From Eurobank, Dr. Tasos Anastasatos, Group Chief Economist and Deputy General Manager. From Goldman Sachs International, Mr. Philippo Taddei, Senior European Economist and Executive Director. And from Piraeus Bank, Dr. Ilias Lekos, Group Chief Economist and Head of Investment Strategy. So, Philippo, let's start with you. Let's look first at the bigger picture. What are the main geopolitical risks for Europe and Greece? How do they differ in their impact on Greece's economic outlook? And what strategies can Greece adapt to mitigate risk? Thank you.
Thank you, Dimitris, and a pleasure to be here with you. So I think, honestly, if we want to talk geopolitical risk, it's going to be all geopolitical risk. It's going to take a little bit too long. Obviously, for Europe, what's most relevant is geopolitical, if we think about the Ukrainian conflict, the evolution of that, most lately what's happening in Syria, and the evolution of U.S. policy, with particular context for references to the U.S. tariff. So rather than talk a little bit about all of them, I would focus on the one that is most imminent, which is the change or the likely change in U.S. commercial policies toward Europe, because that's fairly impactful. And possibly to illustrate how that, let me see whether I can show you just a couple of, maybe later. Anyway, the reason why U.S. tariffs are so important in structurally right now at this juncture of the European outlook is because Europe has been running actually, an investment gap with the United States in industrial terms of about 2% of GDP since 2012. So imagine what that does. Investing 2% of GDP, less than the most important export market for Europe, which is the US, over a number of years, over 12 years. That means that Europe has been missing pretty much 25% of GDP in industrial investment. Not surprisingly, because we've invested less, we've also lost market share. Globally, in the last 20 years, any time Europe has decreased its export share globally, it has lost export share of industrial products to China. So we invest less, and at the same time, oh, there we go. No, that's not what I want to show you. And any time we've lost, you see the red line coming down, it's China that has come up. Okay, so you invest less, and as a consequence of that, we suffer more. Now, keep in mind that net export has been the only driver, or not the only, the main driver for European mediocre recovery that we had until now. There is Greece on one side, Spain, Portugal, to a lesser extent, and then there's the rest of Europe. And that lack of growth, if anything, had one element, net export being relatively more dynamic. Now, moving forward, you see what happened since the pandemic in particular. We became more exposed as Europeans toward U.S. export. The American market is more important for our export. but we also became more reliant on Chinese imports. So we're more exposed to Chinese competition, industrial competition. Now, you understand very well that this is the reason why any factor that reduces the access of European for European product to US market is likely to have a fairly negative effect on European growth. Something that we estimate in the range of 0.5 percentage point only for 2025. So very meaningful. With all the uncertainty related to it. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. There's a lot of challenges ahead. But keep in mind how important that is, that uncertainty is already feeding into investment decision, because no industrial investors scale up investment knowing that there's a risk down the line and not an imminent risk that it will be harder for that investor to export. So really, that leaves us? It leaves us in a difficult spot because as U.S. tariff increases, we will be facing not only difficult access to the U.S. market, but also because tariff will also involve probably China, we will face increased competition from China. What you see there on the slide is that since the pandemic, the number of industrial products where Europe has a comparative advantage and where it is in direct competition with China has increased. Of course, one exception there, Greece. Greece is the country across Europe that is least exposed to this Chinese pressure. So as we look ahead, if you want, and you see that in manufacturing activity, as you look ahead, we see that, in fact, manufacturing activity in Greece has been the most buoyant across the euro area. Everyone talks about the services and tourism in Greece, and I don't want to dismiss that, but I think there's something more structural going on that it's interesting. The geopolitical risk exists, remains, but at least, you know, it is not the same for every single country, and some countries have more time than others to deal with it, and Greece is one of them.
Okay. Thank you, Filippo. Lefteri. Given the current global economic climate, what are the key trends you are observing in the foreign exchange market, and how do you see these trends impacting euro and the Greek economy?
Thank you, Dimitris, and it's great to be here. I mean, Filippo's introduction is basically zeroing in on what matters for the FX market currently. The market is pretty dead focused on tariffs and what that means for the global economy. And the FX market in particular is trading this through a sustained appreciation of the US dollar, including against the euro over the last few weeks and months, which makes a lot of sense. Effectively, a shift in trade policies like the one the US is thinking about amounts to the same thing as a terms of trade shock macroeconomically, which basically means that the country's competitiveness, it's a measure that aims to improve the US's competitiveness, and therefore it undermines the competitiveness of trading partners. So what the FX market does is basically it leans against this sort of process, and it does so front-running that, the introduction of tariffs. It's interesting, in Filippo's slides, you see a net impact, a negative impact on European GDP, and this kind of highlights why the euro is falling. If it were not to fall, then the process unfolding through tariffs would basically result in a very suboptimal economic outcome for the eurozone, which in turn would basically necessitate easier monetary policy in response, higher unemployment potentially, and stuff like that. So what we are seeing is basically a response to that. Now, how this feeds into the various countries in Europe, it obviously offsets to some degree that projected hit to growth and GDP. At the same time, you could argue that it generates a bit more inflation. Thankfully, in developed markets, the pass-through of foreign exchange to inflation is not particularly high. This is mainly because of the composition of the CPI basket. It's mainly domestic goods rather than imported goods. The share of fuels and food is not as high, which basically alleviates to some degree that negative consequence. But of course, it leaves unanswered the question what happens with GDP growth and what happens with broader economic activity. And for Greece in particular, given that it's on a fixed exchange rate, this is the main question. How do you, in the end, absorb the sort of potential damage from U.S. trade policies as they affect mainly the core of the region, which then feeds through and spills over to the periphery. So the FX market is not affecting Greece per se directly, at least at this early point in the process, but it definitely helps us focus on the elephant in the room, and the elephant in the room at present relates to what looks like a likely terms of trade shock for open economies such as the Eurozone. It also invites the question whether the Eurozone business model is the right one. We're talking about a 15 trillion economy, which is very export focused. Its degree of openness is three times that of the US. It has increased threefold since the global financial crisis, while that of the US has actually not changed for the last 30 years or so. So it's a big strategic discussion that needs to take place. But at least at present, I think a focus and a look into the FX trends basically helps frame that discussion in its proper dimension.
Okay, thank you, Lefteri. Tasso, shifting our focus to domestic market, what fiscal policies and structural reforms do you think are crucial for Greece to sustain its economic growth and stability? How can the government balance between fiscal discipline and growth-oriented policies?
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here. So, first of all, the government should continue to do what has been done very successfully so far, and that is produce primary fiscal surpluses. Let me remind that the country has been overperforming fiscal targets for a number of years now, and this year is going to achieve a primary surplus in the vicinity of 3%. And this has, in combination with high nominal growth, has resulted in a decline of the debt-GDP ratio from a peak of 210% a couple of years ago to 163% the end of 2023, and a bit above 153% this year. It will continue to decline due to its favorable structure, very long duration, and low and fixed interest rate. So it should continue to produce surpluses. And I think this is very much feasible, firstly because of improvements that have been realized in fiscal administration due to the higher penetration of electronic means of payments in recent years, as well as due to favorable growth projections in the years ahead. What I think should be the focal point from now on should be how to change the mix of fiscal policy in order to favor pro-growth policies, i.e. how to contain transfers in the budget in order to find some more fiscal space in the expenditure side for expenditure that is more contributing to growth, such as, for example, health and education, as well as infrastructure building, especially considering the progress with the RRF, the Resilience and Recovery Fund. And on the revenue side, which is equally important, if not more important, to find fiscal space to reduce taxes. Now, the corporate tax rate is already at par with the average of the Eurozone, which is fine, but in order to pay tax on the profit, you should have profit first. And in order to achieve that, the non-wage cost should be on comparable levels to other countries. So I think the space, the fiscal space, should be directed towards social security contributions and direct income taxes, which are the components with the higher growth contribution. And also it's a matter of fairness, because wage earners have borne the brunt of the crisis in the previous years. I think this is feasible. I think this is very much the priority. However, in the very long term, it is structural policy that should promote growth and not fiscal policy. Fiscal policy promotes demand at some point, but then it crowds out to a certain extent private investment, so on and so forth. In the very long term, we need to address certain structural issues of the economy, including the loss of people abroad during the debt crisis, and the unfavorable demographics in the very long term, the fact that our product mix is still inclined towards lower technology and lower knowledge activities, and also the fact that we have not been able so far to address the entire investment gap that was created, the capital loss that was created during the debt crisis. So the key in order to achieve all this is to attract more private investment. Investment has increased by some 50% during the previous 3 to 4 years, but is still lagging behind Eurozone peers. It's a 50% share over GDP compared to 22% Eurozone average. In order to increase that, we need structural reforms that would improve the investment environment, and the priorities, from my point of view, are the acceleration and the conferment of justice, cutting of red tape and digitization in the public administration, the finalization of the cadastre and land uses so that investors know what to build and where to build it, and finally, education, streamlining of all degrees of education, and bridging with the needs of the workplace.
Thank you, Tasso, for your input. Ilia, looking ahead and considering Greece's strategic location, which sectors do you foresee as the main drivers of growth in the coming years? What Greece can do to attract long-term capital?
Yeah, thank you very much. It seems that when you are the last to speak in a panel, you always get the most difficult question. But, you know, joking aside, I think that, you know, if you want to look at the corporate universe right now in Greece and look at the sectors of the Greek economy, you really need to sort of differentiate between three different categories. The first has to do with traditional sectors. And in that space, of course, somebody would have to start with tourism. And I realize that tourism has received a lot of bad press lately. But in Greece, we really need some more investment at the high end of the tourism spectrum. So investing in luxury resorts or five-star hotels, you know, still has some a substantial growth story in Greece. But leaving tourism aside, I firmly believe that we really need more investment, and there are very good prospects in real estate, both residential but commercial, and I'm very happy to elaborate more on that if you want. There is quite a lot of appetite and need for infrastructure projects, but also sectors like the pharmaceuticals, healthcare, and the food industry. So these are traditional sectors in Greece that, you know, we see a lot of appetite for investment. The second, as I said, is the emerging sectors. First and foremost has to do with renewables, and that is a very big success story in the Greek economy. I don't think that anybody would sort of have imagined the pace of and the acceleration of investment in renewables in Greece. The second, and that's closely related to real estate, is logistics. I think that in Greece, in sort of the coming years, we will see substantial increase and growth in the logistics sector. I think that there are a couple of key investments that, once completed, they will signify a regime change on that sector. And then there is, you know, the digital kind of sector, both on the IT but also on the data centers. So these are the sectors that, you know, traditional, emerging, and just to give you an idea of sectors that I believe are waiting to be disrupted, first and foremost is agricultural production. It's farming. It's not food processing, but it's, you know, primary production. I think that if you compare the yields per acre in Greece versus other countries, you will see that there is a lot of room for investment and sort of leaving traditional farming methods behind and sort of moving into a more sort of industrialized version of farming. So these are the three sectors in the Greek economy where I see interest. Now, looking at, where Greece can attract or has been attracting capital, again, three categories. Funds that are looking to invest in market leaders, and we have seen a lot of money coming in to get to be invested in companies that have a leading position in banking, in insurance, again, in infrastructure projects, healthcare, pharmaceuticals, and of course, renewables. So these are funds and money that is coming, capital that's coming to be invested in market leaders. Then you have money that is coming to be invested in aggregators. In Greece, there are sectors that are extremely fragmented, and hence very inefficient. So we see a lot of money coming into the hospitality sector and logistics. And they're buying and they try to aggregate various kind of existing firms and gain leading market share in these markets. And last but not least, I would say that the probably the most exciting sector has to do with greenfield investment and startups. In greenfield investment, we see capital coming into renewables. So renewables is a sector where you see investment either to market leaders, the name of Terna Energy comes to mind, or money coming into greenfield projects to sort of buy licenses and build something from scratch. So green data centers, these are the two areas where we see a lot of greenfield investment. And the story that will unfold over the coming years has to do with education. You may not believe it, but we see a lot of interest both for secondary but also tertiary education, money to be invested in private sector education in Greece. And last but not least, we have the startup scene. Maybe it's not on most people's radar, but the startup scene in Greece probably worth around 10 billion euros. And we have also a couple of Greek unicorns, so, you know, non-listed firms worth, you know, being, you know, valued above 1 billion. So there is a whole spectrum that ties very well to the positive macro outlook, the political stability that was mentioned before. So I think that in forthcoming conferences, we will have a lot to say. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. I think the time is running ahead of us, so let's be more concise and quick from now on. Filippo, moving from risk to opportunities. Okay, the investment grade on the back of the improving Greece's economic landscape attracted new types of investors, particularly institutional investors. What are investors looking for when they consider whether to engage in the Greek sector and economy?
So very simply, and but if you could put up the slide back, everyone is just looking for continuing improvement. Okay, so let me just, because we're short in time, let me just give you three takeaway here. Number one is the common wisdom approach to the Greek story, which is, oh my God, look at the green line, it's the green bar is the difference between a growth rate in Greece and the average of the euro area. Oh, there's been a rebound, but the rebound is driven by services because it's a service-intensive economy. And look across the board, the more service-intensive you are, the more you've recovered in Europe. And I think that story is misleading, or partly misleading, essentially misleading. If you listen to what Tasos and Ilias have said just before me, there is what's surprising about Greece is the pickup in actual investment. Now, I'm not going to add anything to what was said. I'm just going to give you a quantitative measure of it. Greece, before the sovereign debt crisis, used to invest pretty much like the average euro area, so 20% of GDP. It dropped down to a bit over 10% of GDP. Now it's up to 15% of GDP. It's a massive improvement, but look how far capital expenditure still is in Greece, the green line, compared to the rest. So there's still a lot of room to recover, and this is investment. It's not just construction. It's also industrial, by the way. Now, for the next couple of years, we all know that the recovery fund provides Greece a massive amount of support, more than any other countries in Europe as a share of GDP. In addition, the Greek government has deployed this private-public partnership involvement strategy through the recovery fund loans. You know, let's hope it delivers, but it's a different approach from others. It should bring in more private investment, which is the other issue that was flagged. So far, look, real productivity in Europe is flat. It's not moving. Notable exception there, Greece again. It's not just Greece, it's also the rest of the smaller European and Southern European countries that are recovering, but no country is recovering as fast as Greece. But now, think about what really is happening here. There. All these countries are increasing, not as much as Greece, but directionally, capital investment, and they're also turning toward both services that are a little bit less traditional, a little bit more value-added, like real estate, finance and insurance, information technology. And you see, unfortunately, there's one laggard there, and that laggard is Greece. So if we look at the next, the kind of the proof of success for this capital intensive recovery that Greece is undergoing is a shift that we should observe. We have not seen it yet in the data. We should observe it toward more value-added services. So that's kind of the if you want, your checkpoint or your weather bell to think about whether this success is this strategy is successful.
Thank you, Filippo. Thank you. Lefteris, staying on the topic of investment, taking into account Greece's investment grade status, how do FX trends affect investment decision relating to Greek assets?
Well, very simply, a cheap currency makes a good story even more attractive. And we're basically seeing that in a way into the U.S. flow in particular, into real assets and financial assets. But certainly real estate is a key beneficiary of also of FX trends. And, potentially you can think of either the equity market or the sovereign bond market also as key beneficiaries. The real question, of course, is not just the currency, because the currency is one thing and you're not really going to invest in Greece just because the euro is cheap. The real question is whether in local currency terms you can present an attractive investment opportunity with a good risk-reward profile. And for a while now, for good reason, the bond market has been such an opportunity. The equity market probably has been such an opportunity. And the question is whether that can remain the case. Now, thankfully, again, there is a bit of catch down in the Eurozone from core countries. This is not the sort of success story that you want to demonstrate to the world. Ideally, you want to catch up while the others are actually improving rather than deteriorating. But still, within that context and within and despite the difficulties that this broader geopolitical as well as business model oriented issue presents, the country needs to continue to outperform. And at the end of the day, for a country the size of Greece, you cannot really define the external constraints that you're going to be faced with, but at least you can do the best you can given those constraints. And all these factors that were mentioned before, the recovery fund, pent-up demand, the sort of depressed initial conditions which allow for a bigger rebound, at least initially, and can generate some momentum, can certainly be a good thing and more promising for the future.
Okay, thank you. Tasso, turning to the Greek banking sector, what challenges does Greece's banking sector face on this new investment grade environment, and how can this be addressed in order to strengthen the sector?
First of all, let us give one moment to remember what the Greek banks have achieved in recent years. You all know the story with, three recapitalizations, forced mergers, wiping out of previous shareholders' value during the debt crisis. But in recent years, the Greek banks have achieved tremendous progress, including in all fronts, such as NPL reduction. I remind that during the peak of the debt crisis, NPL ratio reached almost 50% in Greek banks. And today, in the four more important so-called systemic banks, is in the vicinity of 4%, approaching the Eurozone average. Capital adequacy is very comfortable, with a CAR ratio of 19%. More importantly, Greek banks have a pile of liquidity. We are talking about a loan-to-deposit ratio just above 60%, so tremendous firepower to finance growth in the years ahead, obviously on the condition of quality demand. And finally, they have been able to achieve healthy profitability rates, 3.6 billion profits in 2023, and in 9 months, 2024, another 3.5 billion. So this helps in rebuilding capital buffers. Now, what are the challenges ahead? First of all, the challenge for smaller banks is to reduce NPL ratios in levels comparable to the larger banks. And the third tranche of the guarantee scheme is going to help in this direction. And as far as larger banks and all banks are concerned, I think the big challenge is how to continue to record healthy profitability rates when the basic rates of the ECB will continue to go down and spreads will go down with them. And I think this is more than feasible for three main reasons, three sources of profitability in the years ahead. First of all, is GDP growth per se. We know that there is no growth without credit creation, and there's no credit creation without growth. So in order for these very dynamic growth rates that are projected in the years ahead to happen, we need credit creation. And that means banks will kind of substitute the spreads with the volume of loans to be given in years to come. Firstly, the improvement in wealth management fees. Wealth management is still not widespread in Greece as it is in other European countries, and fees in general, as a matter of fact, are quite low as a percentage of total income of banks, and there is room here for increased wealth under management and fees. Third factor, international presence. My own bank, Eurobank, to a certain degree other banks as well, are expanding. We have affiliates in Bulgaria, in Cyprus, a private bank in Luxembourg, rep offices in the Gulf, in India. We currently get one-third of our profits from abroad operations, and the plan is that by the end of 2025, almost 50% of our profitability will come from abroad. So this is another source of profitability. A final challenge that needs to be addressed, and I think is more than feasible, has to do with the reduction of DTC as part of total capital of banks. DTC is considered to be of lower loss absorbing capacity capital, and the regulator wants to see a reduction. Now, this is achieved via organic profitability that leads to attrition of DTC as share of total capital adequacy, but banks have agreed unilaterally to proceed more aggressively with burning some profits in order to reduce DTC. So instead of seeing a diminishing of DTC by 2040, that was the initial plan, now we expect that this will happen by the beginning of next decade. Okay. And this contributes a lot towards the perception of sustainability of the banking sector.
Thank you, Tasso. Thank you, Tasso. Because the clock is ticking, Elias, and sorry for that. Finally, on the role of the Greek banks on driving growth, are there specific lending or investment strategies that Greek banks could adapt to support sectors poised for expansion, such as the Greek energy, technology, and infrastructure that you mentioned earlier?
I'm not going to get a break in this panel. Okay. I think that, you know, there is, if you follow the, you know, if you are familiar with the Greek economy, if you follow the Greek political and financial press, it is true that, you know, you see some comments that, you know, the Greek banks do not finance the Greek economy, or they do not finance the Greek economy to the extent needed. And, you know, there are some myths and truths in that statement. It is certainly true that, you know, there's quite a lot of competition amongst Greek banks for financing infrastructure, renewables, large corporates in general, and corporates that can sort of benefit from the Recovery and Resilience Fund. Where there is less appetite is sort of financing the second and especially the third tier companies in the Greek economy. And I think there, you know, the truth is somewhere in between. Both Greek banks should, you know, increase their risk appetite after all these years where they need to restructure and deal with non-performing loans, et cetera, et cetera. They have a very sort of conservative view. But at the same time, I think that the corporate universe in Greece should take, you know, the necessary measures to make itself more bankable. So I think this is where, you know, the truth is always in between. And I don't want to sort of abuse the time, so...
Okay. Thank you, Ilya. I appreciate it. So I don't think we have any time for questions, unfortunately. I would like to thank our speakers for this engaging and thought-provoking discussion we had. I think they have provided valuable insights regarding how Greece can navigate the challenges and opportunities of the next day. It has been a pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.